as America starts to nervously open up and hopefully overcome the COVID pandemic, it's good to know some things never change. Feast of Fun is still going strong, and the outrageous comedian Matt Brown is back in person to give you a full dose of gay pride you didn't think you could handle.
Today we are back in the home studio in person, face to face with comedian Ms. Brown. Matt Brown, if you're nasty, and let's face it, who is it? Listen as we take a look at Matt's captivating Joan Crawford-inspired eyebrows and all the sizzling hot news. At 6'7", Carl Nassib becomes the first active NFL player to come out of the locker room and into our hearts.
Aww. Juneteenth becomes a federal holiday.
And release the pressure! Again, Steamworks Gym Sauna and Baths reopens to the public.
I am Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Do you remember when you discovered you were so young and beautiful you couldn't do anything about it? You just couldn't do a damn thing about it, but just sit in it?
No, I don't remember that at all. I didn't have an aha moment at all, no. Although I do remember my mother's hairstylist used to cut my hair too, and then she also cut somebody's I knew, and she goes, "That woman really likes you." I'm like, "She does?" She's like, "Yeah." Mm-hmm. She word for word said, "Mark Fillion is a shining example of what youth in America should be."
Oh my God. Did she not know him?
And I was just like, that sounds really like Nazi-ish or
that
something.
Sounds like
right?
Anita Bryant.
Right? Exactly.
It?
Yeah.
Like, okay, so did you like, were you not a cute kid then? Were you like a fat kid? Did you have asthma?
No, I was a cute kid. Okay. Everybody I knew was a cute kid.
Okay, so everyone was molestable. Good to know,
I had a newspaper article that ran when I was 10 years old, and every kid at school was like, "Oh, Mr. Celebrity now." And I was like, "That's right."
What did
and
it
get used to it.
Did it just say Fausto Fernos Reina? Like,
literally, the headline is Fausto Fernos Cocinerito en su casa. The little chef in his home.
Aww.
And I had a bunny cake and I'm like totally queening out in front of it. And at that time I thought, sure, this is what 10-year-old boys do, is like go, "Hey girl," you know, put in front of the cake.
Carmen Miranda.
And
why not?
And so our phone, when that rang, all these people were like, "Where can I get the shirt that Faust is wearing in the newspaper article?" And it was just a Pittsburgh Pirate shirt that I pulled out of the laundry. You know? There's no planning or anything about it. But yeah, I've been
Pirates. You're like, "I want to fuck them."
No, I just like the yellow shirt, and I like the pirate.
You had a pirate on with the patch and everything.
Arg. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so for me, it's like I've been in the public eye since a very young age, and I love every minute of it.
No, that's why we get along. I mean, I've been singing in front of people since I was 11 years old. And so that, like, constant, that hyper-awareness of, like, what you look like at all times, it sort of comes a little earlier than it does for some people.
I guess it was fame adjacent, because my sister Monica, who's a little bit older.
Fame adjacent.
She was the poster child for the Barber Center, the National Institute. And, you know, she has Down syndrome. And so she was like she was on posters because she was a poster child. Mm-hmm. Right. And so she was on TV commercials and in newspapers and stuff like that. So people all knew Monica. And so they knew us. The newspapers would always take photos of us. So it was like a little bit of a paparazzi.
Well, you know, I think that's probably like the best possible outcome, because when you think about a lot of people who have like family members with special needs, I feel like it's something that they have to explain or something that people don't understand. And then everyone's like, no, that's my sister. You saw her on the bus.
Right.
Like, well, you know, part of it is like fame and entertainment and media and all careers are kind of have highs and lows. Oh, right.
Of course.
And when you first start a new job, there is that imposter syndrome and that's getting used to the newness of it all. Then you kind of get bored with the job and then you start incorporating other things about your life into the job and you start wanting to find another job at that point.
And then you start fucking the boss because you know you're going to leave.
Well, if you're horny for the boss.
Maybe you just want to screw things up in the office. You're just like, I'm just going to burn this down. I'm going to start by screwing the boss.
I'm going to stick this entire phone receiver in my ass. Just really stick it to them.
And, you know, for people who are listening, I'm just realizing there might be like really confused because the three of us are in a room together. Mm-hmm. And this is the first podcast we are taping after the COVID pandemic with a human being in the flesh. Touch my hand. Touch the skin.
Reach out and touch. touch somebody's hand, make this we are world touching. A better place.
And no mask. Have you been vaccinated?
I have absolutely been double not. Vaccinated. I've taken other shots and other tips, and I'm not a waitress. But
how do we know you're not lying and you're one of those anti-vaxxers?
I can show you my test results on my phone, okay? I just really want to come over, Daddy.
I remember the early days of the HIV/AIDS crisis, and I would run into people who were like at the bar getting drunk. They're like, my HIV test was negative. I'm going to get drunk and fuck. And people where the test results were the other and saying the same thing.
Well, yeah, because I mean, when you find out that sort of the party's over, like, I mean,
well, for some it's the party's just begun.
In 1992 the party was not beginning. It was not the beginning of a party.
Well, like Pose, the TV series, also wrapping up,
finished,
and they made it
came,
you know,
early.
I was wanting the body count to be a lot higher.
Oh,
you know,
more dead people, please.
Yeah, I like, it's a Ryan Murphy, man. It's like American Horror Story. Like, how many people die in that?
Well, what if they want to do a sequel or a movie or something?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That? You know, you want to keep some of these.
They
people
need a
together.
Third season to well, put Jessica Lange.
I haven't watched the final episode yet. I've just kind of been waiting, or just it's been sitting there.
But let's clarify something. Yeah. Dying on Pose does not keep you from being on Pose.
That's true. You come back as a ghost. And my sister,
like
my sister sends me an email last night because she doesn't know how to text a photo. Mm-hmm. She's in Pittsburgh hanging all over Billy Porter.
And your I'm drunk like, sister.
She's
what?
Hanging out with Billy Porter, yeah. And his white husband.
I guess.
Where was the white husband? You see, I need details.
Well, Billy Porter, I guess, is originally from Pittsburgh, so he was back visiting.
Okay.
He was at a gay bar. My sister's at another. My sister teaches going to a bar is like it's a job. Like she's got to go and like punch a clock.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to one bar and she's there, and somebody says, "Hey, Billy Porter's at this other place. You know, does anybody want to go? Can you drive?" And my sister's like, "I'll drive." You know, because I think
I've only had four drinks.
Yeah. Does
your sister know who he is?
She met Billy Porter before.
How does your sister know who Billy Porter is?
Because she's from Pittsburgh.
But she's never been to Broadway. She's never watched his TV shows or movies.
I'm sure she watched
Pose, yeah. Porter, he just met her.
But, you know, he'd be in the news in Pittsburgh. He'd be in the newspaper, and people would have celebrated him. And I feel like
he'd be in the jail.
Yeah. he did theater there before, so maybe she saw something that he did. I'm not exactly sure. And I was just like, ask him to do the podcast. And she's just like, just you ask him. He's nice, he'll do it. And I'm like, all right.
Just for the record, we have reached out to his people and to him on Twitter and social media. Silence.
But I'll send you the picture with my sister.
Well, you've known your sister was cooler than you since you were about six.
Oh my
so
God.
This
is what his sister was like. Hey, David. No. What's your name? No, it's Billy, right? Yeah, Billy. Come over here. Come over here. Listen, Billy. David, come pose with me for this photo. My brother's gay. He would love this photo. But David.
It's Billy.
It's Billy.
Why does she sound like Suzanne Westenhofer? Why are you doing this to me?
And then you're like, listen, Billy, I'm heterosexual. Yeah, I don't
he
know.
He is so drunk. He is so
he
fucked
is
up.
So drunk.
His eyes, he is at
glazed
three bars
over.
Ago.
Oh, I don't know, but
he's like,
he's still on
well, he's
set.
On, he's on, he's wrapped up.
Yeah, he's still on, and he's so drunk in that picture. He's still on set. He's waiting for Ryan Murphy to tell him when to leave. Like, he's like that fucked up. Go downstairs. Okay.
Well, he's at a gay bar in Pittsburgh. It's the gay bars in Pittsburgh can be fun.
Yeah. He's celebrating the Juneteenth being made a national holiday.
I guess it would have been around Juneteenth, right? Or the day after.
Indeed, yeah.
Yes.
How did you celebrate Juneteenth, Matt?
I just, you know, I transferred the balance from my Venmo to my checking account, and I enjoyed myself.
Yeah?
I really did.
You asked your fans to donate to the cause.
No, I didn't ask.
Some reparations.
They knew. I didn't ask. They knew.
Yeah,
I didn't sit out with my tin can and my little bucket. No. They knew.
How did
they
you first time. Find out about Juneteenth?
Well, you know, it's really funny. The first time I actually ever heard about it, I was 17 or 18 years old, and I was at an open mic because there's another comedian, a really smart comedian named Aaron McDavis, who had a joke about it. Who the punchline? I won't do the whole thing, but the punchline of the joke was basically like, "That's unpaid overtime," because it was 2 years between when the law passed and when it, you know, yeah. Juneteenth. Yeah. is. Mm-hmm. So the whole concept of that's unpaid overtime. And that was like, that was my first real sort of like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Because I was like just starting college then, and I was a social major, but I had not picked up my double major of Black Studies yet. So a lot of like my Black history was just really lacking, like a lot of stuff that I should have known about myself. And about my history, I didn't. And so that was one of the things that I did sort of pick up with time and experience.
Mm. Well, and it's a shameful part of the nation's history. But the reality is when they made slavery illegal, they put a clause, except for prisons, except for low paying jobs.
You mean I could go back? Okay.
It's, and a lot of people are saying it's like, yeah, you made Juneteenth a national holiday to shut people up.
Well, it's already Saturday.
Yeah.
So national holiday, my ass.
Like, well, it's not going to be on every Saturday. It'll be on the
19th.
15th? 16th? 19th? It's on the 10th.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the June
10th. I'm just really happy for all the racist people in America who are born on June 19th.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're like, God damn it.
I don't want me sharing my birthday with none of these.
Because they all sound like Boomhauer from King of the Hill.
I tell you what, if one of these things, I'm going to stay in the same grocery store line with one of them dark. My wife, before she was with me, slept with a colored.
It all goes back to there. I honestly feel like most racism from most people, like not like your structural racism, not your government racism, not your law racism.
It's systematic. But systemic.
Like, yeah, but like your day-to-day interpersonal reactions sort of prejudices, I honestly think most of them come from like a feeling of sexual inferiority.
Oh, really?
I honestly think...
What does that feel like?
Well, I mean, my dick is bigger than yours, so like to feel however you want.
Yeah, but can you use it like I can?
I mean, I can tie it in a knot, I can tie it in a bow, I can throw it over my shoulder like a Continental Soldier because my dick hangs low.
Juneteenth, baby. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Juneteenth is it's a step in the right direction.
Are we gonna have babies being born? Because that almost sounds like a girl's name, Juneteenth.
Yeah, well, okay, that means you'd have to try to get pregnant in September. So unless there was like a freeze, unless there was a frost, you know, like an early winter.
Nobody wants a Gemini baby.
Autumn leaves.
And not to be insensitive, but in the same week, I think on the same day Juneteenth was announced as a holiday, Steamworks reopened.
Was 17th.
Yes, no, because it was announced on a Wednesday and they in Illinois... And Steamworks opened on that Wednesday.
They didn't let black people in until the 19th, is what you're trying to tell us.
Steamworks opened on Saturday.
Let me pull it up here.
On Thursday the 7th. Because they're open from Thursday to Tuesday.
Well, while we try and figure out their working hours.
So in Illinois, the Juneteenth announcement was on the 16th, and Steamworks reopened on the 17th.
Well... You know,
so they have a Juneteenth party? What are you trying to say?
Well, no, I'm just saying that
How does one celebrate Juneteenth?
I'm not saying they're connected.
I just really just go around asking white people if there's anything else they have to tell me. That's what I do all of Juneteenth. I'm like, is anything you're going to wait for a year and a half or 2 years to spill? Anything?
And you're holding back?
You know, anything you just, any secrets?
You know, the thing is that's kind of a myth is that the enslaved people didn't know. They did know that the law had been repealed. It's just that they were held captive.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I understand that they didn't know.
No, they didn't
know. In Texas. In Galveston,
they did know. They did know. They have written evidence.
Yeah, they
knew everything. From freed enslaved people saying we did know, but there was really nothing we could do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
On the internet, or how did they find out about it?
Will you pause it and I will research it? Because there is a quote.
Okay, that's fine.
There's a major news article saying like there's
people can Google it themselves. Yes, this is not NPR. The myth
about Juneteenth is that these people didn't know, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, you know, praise the Lord, we're emancipated. It was like, no, they knew they had been emancipated, but they knew that they were held at gunpoint, and where were they going to go?
Well, I mean, that's one of the giant myths of blackness in this country. It's that the people didn't know and that they were ignorant. And it's like, no, they had knowledge, but they were held against forces of, you know, institutions that were stronger than they were. I mean, people always want to say that when enslaved, captive black people were brought here in the 1600s, that, oh, these were illiterate people without a culture. No, about one out of four of them spoke Arabic and, practiced Islam. And because, you know, West Africa is still Africa and, you know, it had already been colonized by, you know, other parts. So like this whole idea of like, oh, there's a lack of culture. Oh, there's a lack of anything. No, we knew. No, mm-hmm. we read. No, we could tell. Mm-hmm. No, you can't. There this idea that, you know, Sambo was just walking around dumb.
Right.
It's not doesn't really hold up mm-hmm. because, I mean, even when you look at the historical forces that sort of contributed to the beginning of the Civil War, it's because there were all of these plantation insurrections where all of these enslaved people were just saying, we're not going to take it. No, we're not going to take it. And like just. Really just over it, absolutely passed over it. And like the system itself was
the system was breaking.
Yeah. The system itself is expiring. And Abraham Lincoln and some other smart people said, hey, let's try and legislate what already is going to move on the ground. Mm-hmm. Let's try and be a year or two ahead of it and look like we were in charge of something. And in the eye of history, they are.
Yeah. And, you know, slavery did not end on Juneteenth.
No.
So, you know, to be clear, it's like it continued and it was.
I still have to do unpaid overtime.
And, you know, what is it right now? They're passing all these voting rights restrictions, making it harder for people of color in the United States to vote.
When are we going to get Kamala Harris a new sew-in? That's the black right I'm worried about. We need to get Kamala Harris a new sew-in weave. Like, that is the black right I am currently the most worried about right now.
I think
she's had the same hairstyle for a couple
is
years.
Is that her or just her own hair? I don't know.
Under no circumstances. Okay. Yeah, no, and that's Meghan Markle's hair, too. Well, we're just making shit up and telling stories to our grandchildren. yeah, no, that's a sew-in, and we're going to get her new one. That's next Juneteenth. That's the goal.
So Steamworks is open, and so that's one of the major, and the reason this is newsworthy, right, is because gay bathhouses were targeted at the height of the AIDS crisis as being, you know, a place where queer people, gay men, got together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was targeted because they were like, they're spreading disease and all that stuff. And now these gay bathhouses were closed nationwide mm-hmm. during the COVID pandemic. And they're reopening, mm-hmm. you know, with precautions. You have to, in order to get in, you do have to show your COVID little card. So those of you who lost it, you're going to have to suck your own dicks.
Well, will a photo suffice?
Yes.
Okay.
So you can Photoshop it. If you want me to Photoshop you one.
$25 Venmo.
Venmo, Cash App, PayPal.
One of the most beautiful things that I've ever seen in my entire life, and I mean truly from the bottom of my little black heart, one of the most beautiful things that I ever saw was when we were in Boys Town together, the two of us a month or two
we
ago.
We walked around.
We didn't go into a bar. We didn't go into an establishment. We wanted to see our natural habitat in its natural habitat. Street. We just walked down the street. But I'm trying to make this ethnographical. I'm trying to make it look like Jane Woodall in the fucking woods with the monkeys.
Gorillas
and,
in the mist.
Exactly. And I... We'll never forget when we walked past. It was a dark and stormy evening. I will never forget when we walked past Steamworks and we saw really just like a good looking young guy just walking by the street, kiss his hand and then put it against Steamworks as though it was a religious monument. I thought I was in France at the Statue of Saint Bernadette. I thought I was going to see Saint Lourdes. Like I did not. That was like a religious commitment to sucking dick.
Well, you know,
that was truly
a shrine.
When a lot of guys have orgasm there, they are going, oh God, oh God, oh God,
Jesus, Mary, Joseph, the Magi. Just you're going through every biblical character. Deuteronomy, do it, hear me, my ass.
Do gay people do, oh God, oh God? No, I think that's a straight
kind. I haven't had sex in so long. I wish I could remember.
They just say,
do people of other faith, they're like, oh Shiva, oh Shiva, or you know, Abraham, Moses.
No, Jewish guys are too busy giving you directions while you're having sex. No, you need to put your arm over there so I can feel more comfortable. It's very, oh God, I love a nerdy guy.
You know
guy.
How atheists come?
I love a rabbi.
They spend 30 minutes arguing there's no God.
Exactly. She's finally on my side.
But this pussy's real good.
Listen, life is hell, but pussy's great.
So the you know, all over the internet, everyone's very excited because a white man came out as gay.
Oh, another one?
Carl
Nassib. I feel like DJ Khaled, another one.
Carl Nassib's first active NFL player to come out as gay. Michael Sam's like, Yeah, fuck my drag, right?
Well, he came out before drag. He was drafted. He only played one.
But
like,
after he was shafted.
But so Michael Sam really is the person who paved the way, because at the time he came out, there was nobody doing it. You know, and Carl Nassib, 6'7".
Ooh.
Think about that.
Forget about the 6 feet. Let's talk about those 7 inches.
Donated $100,000 to the Trevor Project.
Oh,
classy. Very classy.
He had all that money in one place. I'm proud of him.
He signed a $25 million contract like 3 years ago, I think. Yeah.
He got money.
I'll suck his dick through a straw.
Listen, you know what?
Plays for the Las Vegas Raiders. I wouldn't mind trading something there.
The Raiders are in Vegas now?
They're in Vegas.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Where's Liberace?
So
the Liberace Museum is closed. You know, we got to tour that, right?
They
we got
closed
to try.
My museum.
We got to try on Liberace's capes.
Well, I like to wear all white and just sit in front of my piano.
It's one of the most frustrating. This is part of the reason
it puts
why
me in the mood when I can play my
it's
piano.
It's one of the reasons why we film all our own stuff and hold on to our footage, because we were working with Outworld.tv, which is a gay media company, and they were filming it, and they got into a dispute with the camera guy, and the camera guy wouldn't hand over the footage. And I was like, that's some bullshit. Pay that guy and let's get these pieces done, you know?
It was fantastic. At least we have a podcast.
Phenomenal about stuff. And I'm like, and I'm so mad about it still. You know, it's probably sitting in a drawer somewhere.
I have a lovely story about that I will get into you off mic.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And about one. Vegas or Liberace?
Not involving Liberace. He's my favorite. No, just involving people with videos, not acting right.
So the NFL is like all over this, and they're all like, we're super proud of you. They're tweeting it out. They have their NFL logo, and it's got little like rainbows on it now. So it's like they're totally doing like a complete about face, because, you know, they've been under harsh criticism for years and years and years, that they've been very restrictive, and like it would be hard for a queer person to come out. And just as a matter of fact, just yesterday on the podcast, we were talking to Bill Cruz, who's a big Denver Broncos fan. I'm sorry to everybody who doesn't like the Denver Broncos.
Or who drove a Denver Bronco.
O.J. Simpson, right?
Just him. Just him.
And so what was I going to say? So anyway, you know, we talked about, would anybody ever come out? And Bill's just like, I don't know if it's ever going to happen anytime soon. What's it going to take? And I guess maybe, you know, Carl listened to the podcast. He's like, I'm going to do it.
I think they're planning this for Pride. You know, it is June 21st as we're taping this. And the news just broke out hours ago. So, you know, the other top news story was that the Stonewall Inn is back to taking booze and pouring it down the drain.
Oh, damn. She's bitter in a hurry.
What?
Because Bud, the company that makes Bud Lights, and Anheuser-Busch has been donating thousands of dollars to Republicans.
But gay guys still love Target, so I don't want to hear any of that bullshit.
Well, Target donates money to progressive causes.
Oh, they changed their mind, like the Mormons?
Was Target giving money to conservatives?
Yeah, they were.
They all do.
Oh, in the past, and about 20 years ago. This
they
is
all
contemporary.
Give it to
conservatives.
They also give, they
not
give
all
a
of
bunch
them
of money
that.
To Republicans.
That's not clear.
But they'll give some to the Republican parties because they won't need to control stuff.
Some businesses and corporations do not do that. And so anyways, to criticize Anheuser-Busch, the Stonewall Inn is having a big event where they're ceremonially pouring down Bud and Stella Artois beer. The fucked up thing about it is like they're also putting out like Pride merchandise and bottles and all this shit, and then they donate to these like conservative right wing Republicans who try to basically stop LGBT equality.
Well, I think that's sort of hateful, like when you really think about it, for this month, because if you're going to pour Stella down the drain, all of our old gays really deserve a drink. Like all of our like post 75 gays that really just see that, they see that Jeff Bridges and Sarah Jessica Parker commercial and they're like, that's a drink for me. Like those guys,
it's not a bad beer.
Let them keep the, again, because your hair's gray. Because it's just, that's a post middle age. That's a Social Security check beer.
It's never been a beer that I enjoyed drinking.
We haven't decided though who's hotter though, Carl Nassib or Colin Underwood.
Oh, Carl.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why?
Hands down. 6'7". Sorry.
6'7".
Well, I got all the white people confused again.
So the
you can't tell the difference.
Republican
between the
one who's friends with Tim Tebow, who was on The Gay Bachelor, or the one who's an actual football player who scores. mm-hmm. on the field. I mean, I'm insane. And 6'7".
Okay, I don't even remember what the gay bachelor guy looks like, but
I don't either.
I do like the football player because he's like, I just have to get this off my chest.
Let's play.
Like, listen, all the cum that's been dripping on
it for years. We pulled it up.
Yes, I'm going to rub it into my nipple when I'm done. So
this is his. He basically came out on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. The gay bachelor? Or
no. Carl Massive. I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Westchester.
I'll take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get it off my chest.
Thanks to Bill Cruz.
I really have the best life. I got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for.
Not to mention cock and balls.
So I hope you guys know that I'm really not doing this for attention. I just think that representation and visibility are so important.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I actually hope that, like, one day videos like this and the whole coming out process are just not necessary. But until then, you know, I'm going to do my best.
They're not really necessary now.
No, they really aren't.
Wait, let them talk.
I'm going to start by donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project. They're an incredible organization. They're the number one suicide prevention service for LGBTQ youth in America.
They keep 13-year-olds alive so I can fuck them when they're 18.
I'm very excited to be a part of it, to help in any way that I can.
Canceled, Matt Brown.
That's all I have for you.
17's legal in Illinois, Matt.
Good to know.
Carl Massive. I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay.
We're back to the beginning.
Wait, let me do this for a while now.
We can never go back to
That's the problem with those Instagram videos. They loop.
Yes.
And you're like, blah, 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 gay, blah, 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 blah.
And you're really stoned and you can't remember how many times you've seen it. And then the next time it loops again, you're jerking off. And then it's just after that, there's just like Cheetos and cum on your, it's just everywhere. It's a problem.
Matt, do you change your voice when you hook up with somebody?
I change my voice when I get the mail.
Thank you, mailman. Well, yeah, I'm just so happy you could drop off your package. I go from like Lana Turner to Marilyn Monroe. I have voices.
Kathleen Turner, more like it.
Yeah, I'm not bad. They just draw me that way.
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way. It's more Kathleen Turner today. Oh, don't smoke, kids. No, don't smoke.
No, I have a different voice for every occasion. I'm a character actress. Oh, yeah.
Mark, do you drop your voice when you hook up with somebody?
No, I don't really have to drop. Like, my voice is low enough as it is.
Damn you.
So okay. I just kind of, I guess.
I totally do it.
I stay. Yeah. I will do the fake lower voice, like the,
hey, how are you? Nice to see you. Like, cool, cool, cool. Thanks for coming over.
You're not fooling anybody.
No, I like still know. They can tell that there's like a giant young lady in there. But like,
paging Mr. Herman. Mr. Herman to the front desk.
Unsolved mysteries.
But like, I'll do that for like the first like 30 minutes. And then like everyone can sort of tell we're all just sort of doing a bad acting job of a real shitty mystery film of like, who's the real faggot? And it's me. It's me.
I like food. Football. I like beer, but not Bud Light because they're not pro-gay.
I like Coors Light because it keeps me slender.
Coors Light used to be the beer people hated back in the 90s, mm-hmm. right?
They banned it from a lot of gay bars.
Yeah.
Why?
Because they were donated to Republican parties.
That's why my brother loves it so much. He will like literally buy a six-pack of Coors and take it to a party and like not let anybody touch it. Like, this is mine. Like, he loves it. He's protective of his Coors.
Was really clever.
Never brought it up.
Mm-hmm. Coors was really clever. They started releasing beers and targeting to gay bars. So like Blue Moon, that everybody's like, oh, I just love the hints of vanilla and orange.
The hint of vanilla and orange. What is this? A fucking ice cream cone?
Hire somebody like Chaz Bono or somebody like
Bono
that.
Or was it all this shit?
Or was it one of the Cheneys ran it or something?
When I grow up, like I really think, I hope when I'm like in my 30s and 40s, I can be like as masculine as Chaz Bono. Like, that sounds like a fucking joke, but like Chaz is like a fucking like dude. Yeah. Like, I just saw Chaz like randomly. I wasn't expecting to see Chaz acting.
You ran to him on the street?
Yeah,
I was just like, hey. And he was like, hey.
No. I didn't expect to see Chaz in one of the seasons of American Horror Story. Mm-hmm. And he was really good at playing a hillbilly. Like,
he reminds me a lot of his dad, like the way he speaks, right? There's a sunny quality to him. Like, did you see Cher tweeted the other day?
I didn't see Cher's Twitter. No.
It was, hey.
Hey.
That's all she said. She said, hi.
Hey.
Hey. Hey. Hey. It's me, Cher.
I'm just saying, if I'm ever, well,
We can get into
because like Cher and Elvis are actually the same singing voice.
Cher was Cher.
Take me home.
It's Elvis.
Yeah,
it's
she'll tell Cher. You she was like that's who she modeled her life after. Yeah. She saw her mother took her to see Elvis perform, and she was just like, that's what I want to do. So mm-hmm. when you see her perform, you're seeing her, like basically a ripoff of Elvis.
Mm-hmm. She's the down to the most karate. Famous Cher Elvis impersonator.
Yeah, basically
down to the karate and everything. Mm-hmm.
That's why she wanted to sing those songs about those blue suede shoes.
Yeah.
And Walking in Memphis.
Yeah.
I was walking in Memphis.
Okay, that's how fucking old and gay I am. When someone starts singing about Memphis, I think about that the Bette Midler movie where she plays Janis Joplin. Midnight in Memphis and all the boys are out tonight. That's where my mind goes. No.
I've just seen the movie, but I saw the movie 30 years ago.
Oh, that was a good goddamn movie.
It was a good movie.
It was honestly A Star Is Born, like the Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga version. Yeah. They should have tried to do it more like that.
Mm-hmm. Did she die in the end?
Yes, she dies on stage.
Oh, really?
Which is how I want to go. I fully want to die on stage.
We could make that happen.
Please, needle in my arm. Like, I really, I need a friend. well, sometimes after, like, those 5-show nights where you've just been on stage all night and it's, like, 2 a.m. and you're still in front of people, like, you just want to rip off the eyelashes, throw them at the front row and collapse. Like, just hit the ground and let them carry off with a shovel.
Is it that rough to be a comedian?
It's that rough to be in front of an audience, period. Just be like a live performer.
Don't you feed off their energy?
Absolutely.
Or do they suck it out of you?
Especially the way I work, because I'm very improvisational and not even doing a lot of crowd work, but just sort of what they laugh at tells me where I want to go next. And if that's a planned moment, if that's a story I have in the back of my mind, if that's something, if it's an impression I used to do when I was 11 years old and I can just tell when they're going to like it. Mm. It's a very tiring and exhausting from the perspective of the amount of focus.
I want my career to be at a place where I could just write the word hey on Twitter and everyone gets excited.
Well, 14 Grammys later and an Oscar.
Yeah. Snap out of it, Cher. We need snap more out words. Of it. We need more words.
Snap out of it.
She does have a Mr. A Wilbur, you know. What is the talking horse? Mr. Ed.
Mr. Ed.
Wilbur.
Well, Mr. Ed and Sarah Quality. Jessica Parker. And a few others.
Why the long face?
Why? I cannot believe they're doing a reunion of that, but I'm very excited because it means Mario Cantone's going to be on TV again.
I'm just mad like that.
Love Mario. I think Mario's a very talented actor.
But without, what's her name? From the Samantha, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Kim Cattrall will be busy and bloated.
That's not the same.
She looks fantastic. I've seen her in a couple of things. She looks great.
I just know that if all my, like, if I was a part of a franchise and I was suddenly not a part of a franchise, I would go eat French fries until no one recognized me. That would be my solution to the problem. But,
you know the Golden Girls, when they canceled it or something, Betty White and B. Arthur.
Yeah, because she wanted the first series started to close, Golden Palace.
They started a spinoff called The Golden Palace. And this is what Sex and the City, the spinoff, is going to be like. It's going to be like the Golden Palace.
How many episodes did they do?
That was like a 12? Season. So probably back then that would be like 22.
Okay.
But have you guys ever interviewed Mario?
No, never.
Okay. I'm because you guys have.
Do you have his contact?
I have.
Is this podcast going to be other people we haven't had on the show?
Because who haven't you had? It's been 20 goddamn years.
It is the.
It's only been 16 years, 17 seasons.
It does sometimes feel like Feast of Fun did it. You know, like when that episode of South Park, they're like. Simpsons did it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Feast of Fun did it.
I mean, we've done pretty much every permutation of every topic to the point we just basically revisit the same topic.
You've interviewed
Hey, Matt, everyone. Do you want to talk about racism again? Let's talk about Juneteenth.
Can we talk about how much black people hate you? Can we just talk about that for the next...
They hate me?
Sure.
Or you?
Sure. No, you. You.
Why do they hate me?
Well, I still can't get
Is
over...
Is there a newsletter? that I didn't get in the mail.
I'm just imagining Phyllis Schlafly's newsletter from Mrs. America. Just like she's typing on a typewriter, like Fausto said this 15 years ago, and we have it on a cassette tape.
It's usually like, white people who are mad on behalf of other, you know, they're fighting racism that
yes!
are digging into some context, out of context message. That then they're looking, and it's somebody that I personally know.
Margaret Cho has the best, absolute perfect joke about that, where she's like, white people always want to talk to Asian and Latino people when shit's fucked up with black people, because They figure they can like figure out what the right side is off of us. They can figure out where the winning team is off of us. Because like what she goes further into, she's like, she's Asian people. We don't really want to be with like white side or black side. We don't pick a side. We just want to win. So whoever's right is where we're going to go. Whoever's right.
People just want to live and be happy, right?
Exactly.
And part of it is like, you know, with the old In the Heights movie and the controversy about it, it is much more complicated than just like, you know, we need to dial up the melanin. You know, it's a more complicated thing because it's the Disneyfication of people who are struggling or people who are not seen or heard normally. And that's the Disneyfication is like homogenization. It's like it's showing a very sunny portrait. It is musical theater, you know?
Yeah. But you're also, when you're saying Disneyfication, what I'm hearing is whitening things up.
Not necessarily, no. Because Disney actually has been a pioneer.
One of those seven dwarves was half Native American.
Disney.
If you look really carefully, you'll spot a teepee in the background.
So Disney has been a pioneer in colorblind casting. You know, the most famous example is Cinderella with, you know, Brandy and
Whitney Houston. The most recent example in 1996, before I was born.
Famous example.
Before I was fucking born.
I mean, what they did, you know, it's like The Lion King on Broadway is universally celebrated as an achievement. You know?
By the way, watching Cinderella on VHS tape?
Yes, and you want to know why? Because not only was Whitney Houston in it, she produced it, and it was her idea to have it colorblind, and that's why it took so much longer for them to do it.
That's so not true.
Yes, it is.
Whitney Houston was supposed to play
She was originally in Cinderella. It to play the Cinderella. Yeah.
But then she aged out.
No, it wasn't because she aged out. It's because when they had her on it, it's when it was after she had done Bodyguard, and so she wanted to start having producing titles on like the work she was doing.
The Wikipedia says she aged out.
Because she wanted to have ownership inside of the project.
She was 40 years old by then.
No, she was not. She was in her early 30s. Okay. So when they got the property, she was in her late 20s. She was supposed to play Cinderella. She wanted to produce on it. And then her idea was we should sort of make this more open. Mm. Like, if you want to do Black Cinderella, fine. But it doesn't have to be an all-Black Cinderella because that's very 1960s.
I'm going to need to see the citations. I have the multiple.
There is the Arsenio Hall interview of Whitney around this time where she gets into that. There is proof that Whitney was an intelligent human being who planned.
She's an intelligent.
She produced a lot of movies. She produced The Cheetah Girl. She produced other things that were like supposed to be just like good family entertainment.
So
like, she
was at smart. That time, Disney was very much, you know, trying to basically, they understood that it is Latino families, Black families, and Asian families that are the bread and butter of who visits Disney World and Disneyland.
Amen.
And so they know where their money's coming from. And so they were marketing a lot of their made for TV movies and all those projects to have a lot of racial diversity because they wanted to reach out to that audience.
Well, they also wanted to make up for all the non-racial diversity that they had for decades.
I also think that if Cinderella and Brandy and Whitney hadn't been such a wonderful, and by the time it got to be Whitney playing the stepmother, they'd already asked Bernadette Peters and Bette Midler to do it. And they said they didn't want to be mean to this Black girl in this movie, so they just had Whitney do it because she was the producer from the get-go.
And that is a very difficult singing part, and I think Whitney delivers.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And I think actually
she was still doing great singing in 96.
And it's one of Whitney Houston's greatest singing moments that people tend to overlook.
Yeah, it was the same year as Waiting to Exhale, which she sang half the soundtrack on, which that's a good goddamn movie and a good soundtrack.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in terms of In the Heights and that controversy, it's like it's more complicated. It's like, you know, we're not seeing like, you know, real Latinx people have curves and everybody's skinny and has six pack abs.
But have people been complaining about like the
they're not complaining
aspect?
About the body aspects, but I'm like, there is more than just the fact that it's, you know, not enough racial representation. It's complicated when you're trying to put a very, you know, complicated community that sometimes is at odds with each other. They're trying to make all Latinx people, whether you're Cuban, Puerto Rican, or Dominican, or, you know, Jamaican, or whatever, it's like that they're all getting along with each other, and they dance in perfect harmony, and that's sometimes not the case.
Well, what, you know? Because apparently two of the four leads are Black or mixed.
Right.
So, I don't, My sort of thought when I heard of some of the upset was that maybe it's sort of like a flip on sort of stereotypical American culture, in that because in this film we have the darker skinned black male lead and then the lighter skinned woman lead. Maybe it's because the woman wasn't darker skinned is why it didn't sort of go more acceptably towards certain Latin people, because that's sort of more of the that's more like what I see like a light skinned dark skinned couple that's Hispanic. It's a darker woman with a lighter guy, whereas here it's the flip. So maybe that was part of it.
Well, I'll tell you this, like being a fan of Lin-Manuel Miranda's Broadway theater work, it's fun to see people who don't normally sing and dance in a musical theater show dancing and singing, right? So it's not just the fact that George Washington or Alexander Hamilton are doing hip hop, but it's also that they're black or Latinx and that they're, doing things and giving us something we haven't seen before. Yeah. And same goes for the original In the Heights. It was this, wonderful to see all these people like doing all this Broadway style choreography to hip hop music.
Yeah.
And that felt fresh and new. Now in 2021, after Black Lives Matter, after all this stuff, it's like it feels stale. And so that's going to be the same problem, I think, that's going to happen with West Side Story. And that's part of the reason they're holding back on it, because they're trying to figure out how to market it. I mean, that's why they were holding back on In the Heights.
Because, I don't know that West Side Story can ever go stale, because if West Side Story goes stale, then Romeo and Juliet goes stale. And if Shakespeare goes, then the society has sort of fallen to pieces. So that's sort of...
it's end times, people.
That's
you heard it first.
Like, I mean, if you really get to the day where the stories of Shakespeare and De Ponte and, Felice Romani, like these just great writers, like if those sort of fall apart, these timeless writers that have existed for, 200, 300, 400 years, like if Don Quixote stops being read, like we kind of lose something as a society.
The human condition would have to profoundly change for those not to be the same.
Yeah. You know what
I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, because they're the stories of humankind.
Exactly. So, I mean, because West Side Story is an adaptation of Romeo and Juliet. So that's the one where In the Heights might go stale, In the Heights might age poorly. West Side Story between Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim. Oh, baby. That music will sound fresh and funky to the day it fucking ends.
It really does. Like Leonard Bernstein, which there, I guess... Can we announce that yet?
I think so. It must be open by now.
He was a homo.
So here in Chicago, Ravinia has basically a pavilion, a animatronic, multi-million-dollar experience based on Leonard Bernstein's music, and it's opening to the public this summer.
I have to go. I'm going to have an orgasm.
It's fantastic. You want to go together?
I'm going to have multiple orgasms because Bernstein's one of my favorite conductors. Because you have to remember, I trained to be an opera singer for eight years. Bernstein could light up a stage with the right singers in the right night. I mean, his recording, he did a more modern recording in the 80s of West Side Story with opera singers like Pepe Carreras.
Tonight.
With Pepe Carreras and Kiri Takanawa, which was very interesting. And then he also did like just very classic hardcore opera repertoire with Maria Callas, who's like known as the diva of all divas. And it was just the most exciting music. His versatility, his command over an orchestra and over singers and over emotions in an evening and how you tell a story, it was past genre. It could be classical, it could be modern, it could be opera, it could be Broadway, it could be a play. Whatever was in front of him, he could make highly emotional and dynamic.
Yeah, I agree with that. Leonard Bernstein is probably one of the greatest creative minds that the United States has ever brought forward.
Not to mention all of the work he did on public television in the 1960s.
As a teacher of music.
As a teacher, to bring the idea of classical music into the homes of the normal working class human being, and to get people who are now, let's say in their 60s or 50s, accustomed to the idea of, hey, you go out with a bar, you go out to your friends with a bar one night, you go out to a play one night, you go into the symphony another night. These are all things that you enjoy and are part of being an adult, and it's not an intimidating experience. It's fun and it's exciting. It's wonderful music. That is, when you hear these wonderful symphonic concerts of all this crazy, intense old music, that's like what Led Zeppelin was in the 1800s. that level of Jesus Christ. That's that level of, oh my God. And he could get you that excited about it. Mm-hmm, he was that passionate musician. He could get you that excited about it. Like it was like you were hearing it for the first time. Like it was 1842.
And it's easy to underestimate the influence that Leonard Bernstein had on how the public thinks about music.
Mm-hmm.
Just like we talked about on another podcast that basically the Beatles made buying music and going to rock concerts and buying albums like the thing to do
for 25 years.
Yeah. And Leonard Bernstein did that for symphonies and orchestras. Mm-hmm.
He influenced so many people like Bobby McFerrin. We wouldn't happen get what was the song? Don't Worry, Be Happy, if it weren't for him.
you know, there's real contributions.
He refuses to play that.
He hates that song. He curses it.
Yeah. Don't worry. Be happy.
Don't worry. Be happy now.
Because it's a transition. Because it's always like in a commercial with something else.
Yeah.
You always need the "Don't worry, be happy now," and then it goes into Gloria Estefan song that's like really fast.
Come on, baby, shake about it. Do not come. Yeah, that "Don't worry, be happy" is on every T-shirt bumper sticker from Key West to San Juan.
Do you know the way to San Jose?
Well, it was a big song. It was the song of the summer, that's for sure.
For me, it was a song of liberation because it was a song that was playing when I had dropped out of school and I had no idea what I was going to do with my life.
Oh, I thought it was when you were imprisoned in the Bastille and they let you out in 1890.
I was like, I'm gay. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do with my future. And it's like, I can't survive in this community right now. And luckily I was able to get out of, you know, high school in Puerto Rico and go into college. And that was like, you know, don't worry.
Song got you there. Don't worry, be happy.
It really was a song that when you're, you know, when you're 16 years old and you feel like your life is, your rope has run out, it did really get me through some hard times.
Fausto, can I ask you a question that I never thought of till right now? Yeah. Do you sort of feel like a lot of the like sort of mainstream culture has caught up to you in the terms of the fact so many young artists now are moving to Austin, Texas to like go figure out their stuff. And you like been there, did that already, took care of all that.
Oh, Austin's such a great city. And it really, you know, I don't know if it's that city anymore, but the physicality of Austin, Texas is that it's still very much a town where it's easy to get around unless rush hour. If you live on the east side and all your friends are kind of nearby with you and going to college, and it was a great place to explore your sexuality, your creativity.
And you were such a big part of the performance art scene down there for so long.
And the drag scene. And
yeah,
it was like, it was great.
But it was a smaller town.
It was tiny. I mean,
you know, and so it's grown exponentially.
But there was diners that were open 24 hours a day and that are not anymore because of stupid COVID.
But we saw a friend when we were down there not too long ago, who used to live here, who's a sex worker, right? And so we hung out with them, and he said that, you know, he really likes being in Austin because he's decided, you know, for his business, he needs a city that is not contracting, like Chicago is kind of contracting.
Yeah.
Whereas like Austin is really booming. People
absolutely
are moving there.
So many young people in their 20s and 30s are just in a hurry to go to Austin.
Well, I think a lot of that is that cachet of like what it was, you know, from in the 90s and Austin City Limits, the music scene there.
Oh, I thought it was Nutbush City Limits.
Well, it was
maybe you're not Bush.
But then also too, you know, the South by Southwest Festival is not, you know, it's music, but it's also technology,
and so it's huge. That festival became a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was like performing at South by Southwest in drag with my friends, you know, back in the day, and we didn't think much of it because it was like, It was
still
festival.
Segregated then because it was 1953.
Well, it was put on by the local newspaper as a way to just kind of get people to like interested in
back when the newspaper was about how information got transferred.
Yeah. It was about selling ads for the venues. That was a big bread and
it was
butter.
About selling ass for the venues.
Yes. And so now they make more money from South by Southwest than they do from that Austin Chronicle.
Oh,
right?
Jesus. Yeah. That's a giant festival now.
And I remember when it was first the internet, or they call it interactive, was all about CD-ROMs.
Oh, those like giant plastic.
A CD that you popped into your computer, and it was a great way to make music interactive. And that's why they did the internet stuff. Yeah. They didn't think of the internet as a media, as a content delivery platform.
It was a tool.
Yeah, it was a way to market music. And South by Southwest was about music. And then they started bringing in film because music was in film.
Remember, and I think Napster. We started going when the first times when they did the interactive, when it was internet based, right?
Yeah, Mark and I, you know, 16 years, Feast of Fun, 3,000th show celebrating this year. And Mark and I went to many expos and conferences. It was not podcasting, it was new media, not internet. Not social media, it was new media. And it was like, there was a guy dressed up in a chicken outfit, dressed up as Elvis, and they were taking him just as seriously as they were, you know, Mark Zuckerberg or anybody else that was there. And it's so weird that, like, we've been in the same room as some of these billionaires, and we're here asking you guys for financial support.
At feastoffun.com/donate.
It's like,
Venmo at Feast of Fun.
Yeah, if the guy, if some of these people that we actually knew back in the day, you know, can be like, if you got an elevator, Bill Gates, be like, hey, Bill, give me $1,000.
I don't know. Like, one of the people who started stand up the same summer as me is like a writer on Conan. So, like, I could play that same real sad violin. Aww.
But they're not, like, writers on Conan are not loaded, you know? These guys are
the opportunity to work really hard and to get loaded, which is what we all want.
Some of the wealthiest people on the planet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Well, because you weren't on the tech side. You were on the.
Jeff Bezos, they have a petition, I think, with 40,000 signatures to keep him from returning to Earth once he goes up into space. Like, just keep him there.
I mean,
you know,
I want
Elon Musk.
The only way I would support that is if I'd married him right after the divorce. Mm.
Like, he would have you sign a prenup that would, you know, did you see his nudes?
He has nudes. Jeff Bezos has nudes.
Oh, you haven't seen him?
No, I've really been minding my business this year.
You've been busy searching for that gay football player, Carl Nassib, who had to look up his name.
Because once again, you know, I'm really trying to get into an issue with a Palestinian this time of year. That's really exactly what the mood I'm in.
Is he Palestinian? What is it? I don't know.
Nassib just gives one. Listen, anything could happen, and I just try to be careful and respectful of all people and all backgrounds. I, in addition to being a comedian, a singer, a host, a humanitarian, and an actress, I am here for the people.
We were going to talk about Joan Crawford's eyebrows through the years.
Oh, yeah. You pulled up this article, which basically was just different pictures of me.
Yeah.
And
why are you? But your eyebrows look like, you know, earthworms, or they look like furry.
Pretty earthworms.
They're very well. Okay. Because the thing is, I have giant eyebrows and giant eyelashes because I can't have pets. And so these take up all the emotional labor. Like, my eyebrows have their own litter box. Like, it's very.
How long does it take you to do that?
This is very interesting. The eyebrows.
Do you have a stencil?
No stencil. This is freehand. That's why they're crooked every time. My eyebrows take the longest of anything makeup wise I do.
Yeah.
Like, I can spend 10 minutes just putting on eyebrows.
Yeah, just not that long. Your face looks like that game that kids play with iron filings where they make a mustache or something.
You make a mustache and, like, there's like a cheekbone on the side and then maybe like a hot dog going into the mouth.
It's like that same guy from Operation.
With the big red nose.
Yeah, but you can put a beard on him.
I am shaped the exact same way as the Operation man. I am pear-shaped.
And if we stick our finger inside you, you're going to go,
oh, God. I wish I had a buzzer instead of just my swatting hand. I feel like, what are you doing? I feel like an would be a little bit more powerful.
I kind of like one time just put the metal piece on the side and just sat there and it was like.
So what's the process like for you, these eyebrows?
He's just putting on makeup.
Okay, so it's literally four different eyebrow pencils.
Oh my
God. Because you need texture and depth.
Exactly. He understands me. He doesn't say, oh my God. Mark understands
you. You are putting on way too much makeup.
Entirely. Fully, truly.
You're just a whore.
Oh, yeah. No, because I start with the bottom line and a dark brown pencil just to, like, sort of get them semi-even with a dark brown color. Mm-hmm. And then I build up the arch and the top side with, like, a medium brown. And then we have to build in the front with a blonde. And then I'll add in a very tiny amount of black near the end for texture and depth. Mm. But like, it's four different colors. It's like every different area. It's very color by numbers. Every different area. Everyone knows where they're supposed to go.
Do you line like, it out? Do you do little dots? Like little.
That's tacky. These are Israeli soldiers who have like practiced their choreography and they know where they're supposed to be when the bombs go off. Like my eyebrows know where they're supposed to be when the shit hits the fan. And so I don't do the stencil. I don't do a here's a dot. I've been making them take up a third of my forehead for most of my adult life. And this is who I am now.
But it does look like Groucho Marx in drag.
Basically. Yeah. Because truly, when you like see me on stage in makeup, yeah. The only things you see are eyebrows, eyelashes, and lips.
You know, it's super important. If you're a politician and you have blonde or light colored eyebrows, they dye them. Because people with strong eyebrows are found to be more trustworthy.
And they're also thought to have bigger dicks by the public.
No.
It comes off as more Mediterranean and earthy.
Oh, really?
I guess. I would assume.
Which Mediterranean country are you from, Matt?
I'll pretend to be Italian because I can speak the language because I'm drunk enough right now.
Okay.
Well, I was on MTV's Teen Mom with You.
Yes.
And they, you know, they
microbladed
my eyebrows. And then the producer's like coming up and says, go ask her about her abortion. No. Ask her about putting up her
children.
Place their kids. Yeah.
Microblading sounds like that like African tribe where they cut like scars into you and let you heal, and then you come out beautiful on the other end. Like that's like just tiny little razor.
I gotta tell you.
Oh, he looked like Zeus on the first day, but after it settled, it was good.
I got to tell you guys, if you want to spend some money on a procedure on your face, penny for penny, it is the most cost effective.
If you have a spare grand and Botox intimidates
it's not a spare grand. It's like $200.
Yeah, it's like $100.
Oh, really? I thought
it's super cheap.
Okay, because some of the places. Because some of the places I were looking at were like $5, $7, $8.
No.
Okay. No, go to the suburbs.
No.
Go to Michigan.
Like, I don't want these eyebrows permanently affixed to my forehead.
The thing is, like, when you do the...
I want to be able to tone it down when I want, because I literally look like Joan Crawford in Fugue.
You are not acting.
The person who did Fausto's, we talked to her. I forgot what her name was. She was lovely. Said you want to do about, like, 70% of what you think it should be, and the rest finish with makeup.
Mark is the star of the show, Caitlin Baltierra.
No, but the...
She was the one who did my eyes.
She did your eyes, but the one who was teaching her, I talked to her about it.
Yes.
And she's the one who owns the studio, the microblading studio in Fort Dearborn. Was that where it was?
I got laser hair removal on my whole body, and now I want microblading on my pubes. I want him to tattoo him back on.
That's Miriam.
Miriam.
Miriam Hamoud. Shout out Beauty Bar 424. Follow them on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
And she said you want like 70%. And she looked at I was like, do I need it? She's like, you don't need it.
No.
You have lovely eyebrows. Mm-hmm. But we could clean them up a little bit.
But exactly. Don't we look like a nice heterosexual couple for the publicity photo for a Teen Mom?
I mean, it definitely looks like someone needs a citizenship sort of recognition somewhere.
This
looks like an Eastern European sort of denial.
This is the crisis visa. That Mark and I have.
She's Lebanese.
This is the crisis that Mark and I have, that we get on reality television shows, say brilliant, hilarious things, and it winds up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
Like we're like, I'm on Teen Mom and I didn't have to get anybody pregnant. None of that was on the air.
No, that was the best line.
No, but that's always what happens is that you go in, you audition for the commercial, you improvise, they tell you you're hilarious, then they find an actor to go do all the lines you improvise and then be
We are on the show.
That's evil.
We're on the show.
All the time.
We would not swap by anybody, you know.
Okay. Can you sue for that?
You can do a lot of things and they get you nowhere.
Oh, you should record it.
I should.
Did you actually? People. Did that actually happen to you?
No, but it's happened to other people.
Okay.
No.
You're making it sound like.
I feel like I have heard that before. Yeah. People like improvise some stuff and they're like, let's use it and have somebody else do it.
Exactly.
Well, you know, they want Hollywood ugly, not ugly, ugly.
I've had that happen in real life, just like not like for commercials, but a different circumstance with different, uglier people.
Listen, you know, Untucked came from this podcast.
Oh, God. Untucked, unfucked, unlooked at, just undiscussed. You know?
And it's like this Pride season, the cougar pride, the lipstick lesbian pride flag was something that I just whipped up in 5 minutes.
There's a lipstick lesbian pride flag.
Fausto made it.
I designed it for this podcast, and some bloggers got all wind of it. And now it's the official lesbian flag.
And where's your check in the mail?
I got not a penny, but, you know, I'm happy to say that, you know, Daniel Quasar, who did a lot of amazing work on Cooking with Drag Queens mm-hmm. on the animated sequence, he is the progressive pride flag designer. Mm. They are, because non-binary. And Daniel probably is going to, you know, retire from that flag.
Okay.
So it's fantastic that at least I know somebody who got compensated very, very well for that design.
If somebody wanted me to draw the current gay flag, I would be absolutely helpless.
You would just take a bunch of crayons and scribble on the page.
I would just write the F word really big and then just walk away from it and say, you're welcome.
Fuck me.
That would be my giant contribution.
Just the word
fuck. What are you going to do to celebrate Pride?
Are
you going to the parade or the march?
There is no parade.
I'm doing a Pride show on June 23rd at my buddy's. And then I'm doing some things at Lincoln Lodge that same weekend on the 25th and 26th of June. But I don't really have like a world. I don't really do a lot of Pride shows anymore. And I don't really, I don't know. That's just sort of.
Well, there was every time you anymore, perform, it's like
you've been in comedy for what, 3 years now?
Five.
Last year there was no work because of COVID, so
I don't know. My first 3 years were very like piping hot with it, and it's just like I don't know. This month my calendar's just been very busy with mainstream stuff. It's I don't know.
Matt,
it seems like
the younger trying and to the get gayer. You to plug your shows,
but I'm also trying to make a point.
What's the point?
I'm getting next to it. It seems like the younger and the gayer children have picked up on the Pride shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This seems like that's more of like a drag moment. Miss Brown's too old school and too Vegas for the young kids. They think I'm Lee Baranchi.
Have you watched Hacks?
I haven't watched Hacks.
But I watched the first episode.
I feel like Jean Smart. Yeah. I already do. Mm-hmm. And then also someone who I love and adore and think is hysterical and amazing has a role in that. Megan Stalter plays the secretary in that. And I was really lucky to get to perform with her in 2016 and 17 and 18 before she moved. She is hysterically funny.
She's good in that.
She is hysterically funny. She, when I first met her, like just as a person interacting with her, my thought was, you're either the best actress I've ever met in my entire life or you're out of your fucking mind. And it's the first one.
Could be both.
It's the first one. It's fully the first one because her stage character and her acting is just so broad and so bright and so sharp and just multi-layered. And then talking to her, most normal woman in the world that you've ever fucking met. And it's just like, you're either the best actress or you're out of your mind.
Awesome.
And it's best actress. It's best actress.
Matt, thanks for coming on the show and really popping our cherry.
I'm happy I could get in there with two fingers and a lot of love.
We're back on the saddle. We had a guest in our home studio.
It's amazing. It's been a year and two or three months.
Yeah.
Our last guest was Jaker Knowles.
Yeah. Jaker.
I'm in great company because Jake's excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I'm the first guest.
Why settle for the rest when you can have the best?
I know, right? And like, why settle for the home studio when you could settle for the bedroom? Change your sheets. It's been a long year and a half.
I actually did wash his. Yeah, he washed his comforter. I'm like, you need to plan better when you're going to wash your comforter because that thing takes a while to dry.
I know, right? Sorry. You know? Like, it has to be crusty with semen before you wash it.
Well, you also, you know, start in the morning because you got to.
Start in the morning.
Well, the morning was 11:30 a.m.
10 a.m.
11:59
She drinks, and I'm sorry.
I want to remind folks we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus.
Yeah, follow us on social media, Feast of Fun, and of course, Matt Brown Comic. Ms. Brown.
Ms. Brown Comedy, MsBrownComedy.com, Ms. Brown Comedy on Instagram, TikTok, and everywhere
but
else.
It's MS.
MS, Ms. Brown.
For multiple, what is it?
Multiple sexualities, Brown.
Yes.
That's really just, I'm trans label. I don't have time for
sexualities, yeah. Brown Comic.
There you go. It's comedy, Ms. Brown Comedy on Instagram, TikTok, and MsBrownComedy.com, where you can see all my shows that are coming up.
Yay!
But yes. didn't you want to plug? You don't get to plug anymore. It's too late.
He said Lincoln Lodge.
You did. I already said that Lincoln Lodge is coming.
Well, you said you're going to bring your phone and you're going to read things off.
See, here you are.
It.
You're making me feel like a prostitute who's got to read out her black book now.
You don't get to do it.
That's
now.
Where I'm at.
It's too late.
No, I'm
it's
all,
too late.
He's not recording anymore.
It's too late.
You're not recording anymore.
The show's over.
You're going to leave me? You're going to leave me out here on the lake?
Show's
I'm
going to
die.
Sorry.
You're going to be with Louise.
What's your cover photo on Facebook?
My cover photo on Facebook? Yeah. Oh, that's me from Zany's at All May Long. I was there every Thursday night in May, and I got to wear all my pretty jackets, and I got to be a very, very beautiful woman.
Do you like
Zany's?
Do you like that room?
No, because I really didn't get to work there till the pandemic hit, and I've been there a lot, and I've had a great time.
What's the best room to work in?
I would say, it's so hard to pick a favorite, but my home's always going to be Comedy Bar, and my favorite's
they
always going to be
since
Comedy
we
Bar.
Saw you there.
They used to be on Grand and LaSalle, and now they're on Superior in Michigan, and they're the first place I ever performed, and that's home base. I feel more comfortable there than anywhere in the world, and they always have shows like literally 7 days a week, like rain or shine, no matter what's going on. If you want to giggle, you want to get some pizza, I will probably be at Comedy Bar, and so should you.
Well, all right.
Well, thanks for coming on, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
Did you want to read the dates? We don't have to.
You know what I want?
Now you got me curious about what the dates are.
You're never going to know where you're going to find me. You just got to look.
You just have to in order to see Matt perform, you just have to get lucky and stumble upon his shows.
Hit up my Venmo or Cash App. We don't know. Matt Brown money. No, July 3rd.
Well, they said you're mad. July 3rd, something's happening.
July 3rd, I'm going to be at Lincoln Lodge at midnight for a midnight show for all you late night hookers.
I have to take a disco now.
July 7th, I will be at Comedy Bar at 8 o'clock. Having the time of my life. And then I'll also be there on July 31st, which is a Saturday. So once again, I'm everywhere. I'm over the town. I'm over the country. I'm over the city.
Or you could just, let destiny take control and make it a happens chance. Happenstance.
If Beyonce was in Destiny's Child, yes. And we need to know whose Destiny's daddy is, it would be Jesus.
Is Beyonce the most talented person of Destiny's Child? Or is that Kelly?
I think LaToya Luckett really was sort of not looked at for all she had to offer society. I really think she could have been a Judy Garland kind of, real singer, dancer, actress.
Wig off and put 5 ice cubes on my head.
5.
That is the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
Isn't it?
Maya Rudolph with doing Beyonce and eating chicken wings and getting too hot.
Because listen,
my favorite
thing. Lights are already bad enough, but the chicken wings don't help.
And the weird thing for Saturday Night Live when she did that bit is that her wig was all messy.
Well, I think because they're trying to show a sweaty Beyonce. It's not glamorous.
But start with looking good, and then
Saturday Night Live wigs. They have no principles at all when it comes to wigs.
It's worse than Tyler Perry.
They use the most horrible wigs for everything. Exactly. Anyone.
The best wigs that were
Maya Rudolph has money. She could bring her own wig.
She's not going to spend money. She's tired. Lauren Michaels.
She's doing Beyonce.
She has a white husband. She's busy. no, the best wigs that
her mother's Minnie Riperton.
Was.
You have to sing the song when you say her name.
And then I just squeak.
Loving you is easy because you're beautiful. More and more each day, I want to spend it with you. La 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 la, la 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 la, la 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 la, la 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 la. Do 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 do.
I smoke. And you play video games, apparently. Shit. No, but you always notice, like, the wigs, it's always, they do the wig for the very final scene.
That is true, yeah.
That's always
the wigs point. Come at towards the end, they're like, just slap that thing on Maya.
I always used to love when Deborah Wilson would do Mariah Carey on Mad TV, because she would just show up in a bikini and scream. And that would be it. She put her finger to her ear and just scream for a minute and a half, and that would be the it.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.